You are listening to Confronting the Pipe Dream, voices on the front lines of resistance against pipelines. Confronting the Pipe Dream is a grassroots radio project which seeks to unite voices across colonial borders and bring those voices from the front lines to the foreground. As pipelines continue to expand, so does people's resistance. If we're going to stop the flows of oil and gas that are threatening our communities, we need to first open the airwaves. On today's program, we'll hear an interview with Amanda Lickers.
While we're doing all that work of like actually stopping pipelines, we need to be making sure that we're also like reclaiming our identities as well as our territories.
Amanda is an Indigenous organizer from the Turtle Clan of the Seneca Nation. Her work focuses around decolonization and land-based issues, and she recently co-produced a film on Indigenous resistance to tar sands pipelines, which you can watch at www.reclaimturtleisland.com.
Sego, Amanda Yunjits, Ya Dewaga, Dirty Underdate, Sini Waxinoda Nokohome Neha, Deno Ginyoda, Onandawaga, Hodino Shoni. So I go by Amanda and I don't know my Onguhome name. And I belong to the Turtle Clan of the Onandawaga or Seneca Nation, the Haudenosaunee Confederacy.
So lately you've been doing a lot of organizing against oil pipelines, tar sands oil pipelines in so-called Southern Ontario and so-called Eastern Canada. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So, wow, where to start? Like, I've tried so many things. I've been trying to like build different strategies, and primarily I think the main point that is I think like the main point that's been my focus throughout this entire process and this entire journey was trying to create like accessible educational tools. And I finally just successfully did that. So, but I think just getting information out there is really important. I'm really excited about this video that's going to be really, that we're releasing on Wednesday, that I co-produced with Frank Lopez from Submedia. And it's going to be called, well, we haven't fully decided on the title yet, but I think we're going to call it Gansans Dansera, Indigenous Resistance to Tar Sands Pipelines, I believe is going to be the title, which means, and Gansans Dansera is it's a Ganyigaha, it's a Mohawk word that means strength and unity. And it is like a really, I don't know, it was a really amazing process, like just like meeting with people from like all over Northeastern Turtle Island who are, you know, land defenders and Indigenous resistors and folks who are decolonizing themselves and their communities. And it was just, it was really powerful. There's a lot of like on the ground resistance, and I think there's a lot of potential for strong direct action. But I think it's also like organizing against pipelines, you have to also understand the connections between pipeline expansion, like pipeline development and tar sands expansion, as well as the link to fracking and how fracking, the fracking industry fuels the tar sands. And that this is all part of like a broader picture of colonial capitalism. But anyway, so yeah, some of the things, like there's been a lot of actions and stuff, like there was Sovereignty Summer, and there was like, I think one of, there was like an action that was, there's like, there was a bunch of stuff like in Omgenang, like ASAP, Omgenang and Sarnia Against Pipelines have been doing a bunch of stuff. And there was the Swamp Line 9 occupation of the Westover Terminal, which was really exciting. There's also been like the National Energy Board hearings for these, for this particular pipeline, for the Enbridge Line 9 pipeline, which there's like, we're coming to a head for demonstrations coming the next 2 weeks as like the NEBs take off in Montreal and Toronto. I've been like trying to mobilize like within a band council structure for a while there, because of through the NEB process, especially like a lot of traditional governance isn't necessarily coming from a Haudenosaunee context. Like it doesn't always look the same in other communities, like around like traditional governance. And so like tried to like see, because there was a lot of band councils who are intervening against the pipeline project and feel like even from like on a band council level that there hasn't been like proper consultation at all throughout the entire time. And So yeah, and then but recently I've been meeting with the Haudenosaunee Environmental Task Force, which works really closely with the Grand Council, which is our confederacy, our traditional governance body. And so I'm just looking forward to building that relationship and trying to support mobilization and opposition, because it's like the health of our territories that's at risk, and it's like it's about survival. So
can you tell us a little bit about, you know, some of the communities that Enbridge's Line 9 is going through, and, you know, what does resistance look like in those communities?
Well, Line 9 goes through like over 17, you know, it's within a 50 kilometer radius of impact of over 17, like First Nations communities or reservations, including Métis Nations. And I think it looks really different throughout, but I think there's like a really, you know, strong passion, and there's like a lot of frontline opposition, like in particular in Omgenang First Nation, which is Anishinaabe territory. And there's been like a lot of youth mobilization there. And they also like, it's I've been to some of their demos, and there's been a couple of like, you know, like blocking highways and stuff, because in Chemical Valley, it's really heavy. You know, like there's a lot of infrastructure, you know, there's like Suncor, Shell, there's Imperial Oil, you know, like there is the, it's a pretty serious thing. And like Vanessa Gray has been a really prominent, force there, I think. And, yeah. So, there's obviously like, it looks like there's like an intergenerational collaboration amongst like elders in the community and youth who are taking action, which I think is really healthy and really exciting. And like in Six Nations, you know, there's been, there's some support with like the Swampline 9 mobilization, and, a lot of like, there's been some community meetings and stuff, and just like folks deciding like how to take action, I think, you know. And like Six Nations they've always been a really strong community of resistance. And so, you know, like in our film, for instance, like we interview Melissa Elliott, who's like a pretty, pretty awesome woman. I'm really inspired by her. And I think there's like a lot of community conversations happening, because like this is not the first time, you know, like Six Nations, like there was, you know, like encroachments on land, you know, in the 2006 stuff. And so, yeah, I don't know. And like, can't speak to exactly what, you know, is going to come out of there, but like, there's been definitely like a lot of information sharing and mobilization, in that way. So yeah.
on a personal level, like I know that you've kind of said before that you don't really see yourself as an activist, but more as a land defender, as an Indigenous woman. So can you talk a little bit about that, like your kind of like personal relationship to this issue?
Well, I don't know if I would call myself a land defender, but I think that's like, a major motivation for how I am moving forward. Cause I feel like, I don't know, this isn't just like, other people have said this before me, and, I think that it's just like a matter of fulfilling responsibilities as an Indigenous person, that there's like, I exist, I'm alive. And so that means that like, I have to, like, I should be doing things. Like, so the idea of with like responsibilities is like, for instance, like the sun is fulfilling like his responsibilities by shining down on us. And like, even though we're like fucking up big time as humans, like as two-legged people, you know, beings or whatever, even though we're like fucking up, the natural law is still happening. Like we still, like plants are still giving sustenance to us, you know, water is still supporting us, although like we're threatening that, you know. But like in all these ways, and the natural world is like continuing to fulfill its responsibilities of life affirmation, and we as part of creation have those same responsibilities. And so as like humans, we should be working towards caretaking the earth and not destroying her. So I think that's like sort of where I come from in that, and I know that a lot of Indigenous folks like have, you know, share that, you know, perspective it was something just coming through the interviews of like the film that we just did when we were like, we went from Mi'kmaq and Wolastoq territory through Haudenosaunee territory and Gunnestaugi and Ganawage to Six Nations. And when we stopped also in like Six Nations treaty territory, I guess, but it is like also like Anish, like traditional, like Anishinaabe and Shenanton and like shared territory with the Haudenosaunee and so-called Hamilton. And spoke with an Anishinaabe Kwe from up north, like, and then like also went to Amjanong and so like, and just like a lot of these, like, you know, folks like with, you know, resisting and from their locale, you know, spoke a lot about this sort of like idea of like an activist or an organizer and just like the role that ego has to play with a lot of like the earth destruction stuff and the connection there and just like humbling themselves and like looking forward as like to decolonize like also their own selves and like understanding that we have responsibilities as human beings, and that means like stopping pipelines and shutting down the tar sands, you know. So
And then, you know, maybe to elaborate a little bit on that responsibility to shut down the tar sands and specifically the pipelines, what would a decolonization approach look like specifically around pipelines, like if we're gonna approach this from a decolonization perspective?
So I can obviously only speak from like my position as a Mi'kmaq indigenous, but so for me, the whole process, like in terms of like decolonizing, like my resistance to the pipelines, that also means, so like, what do pipelines mean? Pipelines mean colonization. They mean ongoing land theft, and they mean the destruction of Mother Earth, you know, like, and by destroying the land, by destroying the territories, by poisoning the water, you know, like by killing that, those specific places all over Turtle Island, you are directly attacking the indigenous nations who come from that from that particular place, you know. And so pipelines are part of the project of genocide that is the Canadian state, you know, and that's what the tar sands is about as well. It's has been called before slow industrial genocide, and it is about land theft and murder, you know, in the name of capitalism. And so understanding those things, to decolonize my resistance to those things, means to also understand indigeneity for myself and my identity as a Haudenosaunee woman, you know. And so like, what does that mean? And so I think that other things like cultural, like revitalization, are also an integral part of like resistance to the tar sands, to fracking, to pipelines in particular. And so like, for instance, part of my resistance to Line 9 has been informed by the Sewa Dogwa Sera, which is the Dish With One Spoon Wampum, which is an agreement between us Haudenosaunee and the Anishinaabe in particular, to have shared caring for territories that overlapped, and like has been largely could be understood as Lake Ontario, but or it could be the Great Lakes, or like it also expands, right? It's like one lake, all of creation. It's just like the idea, it's really cool too, because I feel like this teaching is like so indicative of how autonomy and self-determination and mutual aid and respect of like work within an indigenous context. And so like, for instance, like we in Haudenosaunee tradition, like that's the, I don't actually know my language of Onondaga, like we have less than 50 speakers, so most of like my language access is through like the eastern door of the confederacy, which is the Ganigahaga, the Mohawks anyway. And so this word that we have, Sewa Dogwa Sera, is like means spoon. And I always do this, I should start with the Anishinaabe part, but it's just like the idea is that we eat from the same spoon. And so we'll share the spoon and we will act with friendship and respect with each other. And so if there's like not enough food for a season or something like that, we can knock on each other's doors and help each other, like from a nation to nation relationship. And also like, because of the great law of peace, there would be no knives at the table because knives cut and these are our friends. And then I can't remember exactly how to pronounce, like my Anishinaabe moment's not very good, but how the word that they use actually means dish. So, and the idea from that is that we're eating from the same dish, and that there is this one dish that all of our peoples are taking from. And it's also not just our peoples, it's all of other aspects of creation. So like animals, you know, that there's all these other non-human nations who are also taking from the same dish. And so to be mindful of how much we're taking also. And so I think it's just like, I really love just the power of that, because it's like we were neighbors and we had this agreement that has a wampum belt, you know, has the same kind of like visual signifier, but our like the way that we talk about in our languages are completely different symbols, like a dish and a spoon. But that's why in English it's dish with one spoon, and just so how those similar concepts are translated within a cultural like encapsulation is like, I think, really inspiring. But anyway, so that's like part of like my own like process of decolonization, is understanding my relationships not only to my territories and to my people, but to other nations, other indigenous nations who I share territories with, and like why we need to work together, you know, and moving forward. And so yeah, so I think that's a really important piece too, is to understand our relationships as Indigenous people, as Ongohome, Anishinaabe peoples, as Innu peoples, Innu peoples, you know, as Métis peoples, as to, as first peoples, as people of the earth, is to, you know, figure out a little bit about our geopolitical relationships a little bit pre-contact, you know. And there's a lot of ways in which colonial narratives have like impacted things too, you know. So anyway, so that's like part of it. But also like, I think that honoring the water, and like I've been smudging a lot on this trip, and it's just like, and just like actually taking the time to like, to just, you know, sit in nature and like, and actually be part of, you know, like take all that in, you know, I think is really important, not only to the health of my spirit, but also to like be checking in, you know. It's like allyship, right? It's like you can't act in allyship with someone you don't have a relationship with. So like, how can I like try to be like helping Mother Earth if I don't have a relationship with her? Mm-hmm. So yeah, so those are some ways. Also just like, there's also a lot of stories. There's a lot of teachings. There's a lot of stories in different nations and different communities that talk about the pipelines coming, you know? And if you watch the film, Ron Trombley from Wollastoq, he's Wollastoq man, and Wollastoq territories in so-called New Brunswick, talks about a prophecy they have in the film about a two-headed snake coming from the west. And in Ganigahaga and Haudenosaunee tradition, we have a prophecy about two unsatiable snakes, you know, that just grow and grow and grow and grow. And so it's just kind of interesting, you know, how there are these teachings and there are these stories that are so relevant, you know. And like also, I mean, especially, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on about even just like how the process of colonialism unfolded, you know, like the seven generations prophecy and stuff like that, like talking about how the pale faced, if they come wearing the mask of death, you know, then it's like this one path gets chosen kind of thing. And it's like, and there was like this moment where it could have been friendship, but it was definitely not, mm-hmm. you know? And, yeah, so I think that's all really important stuff too, because we have to have like the cultural strength and the collective strength, to be able to like fight off like a really intense machine. And I think that the intergenerational impacts of colonization are a huge, obstacle for us all to overcome, you know? And so I think that, in the process of like doing all of the on the ground work, the community mobilization, the direct action, like, and like, as well as like whatever else stuff seems necessary, like NEB processes or whatever, I think while we're doing all that work of like actually stopping pipelines, we need to be making sure that we're also like reclaiming our identities as well as our territories.
You've been listening to Confronting the Pipe Dream, voices on the front lines of resistance against pipelines. We just heard an interview with Indigenous Seneca activist Amanda Lickers. This project is supported by the Media Co-op and Kuperg McGill. Original music brought to you by One Speed Bike. For more information on this series, please contact Confronting the Pipe Dream at riseup.net.